Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Dr. Katie Hausman.
Hello.
Of the website Pop Tonic. She is a journalist extraordinaire.
Something like that, kind of. Not really.
We just had a... You moved here to Austin, Texas recently.
Yes, I did.
You're looking at the comedy scene, so you can write little Pop Tonic articles.
Well...
You know, stay on touch with things. What's going on?
Well, that's not really why I came here. Pop Tonic, which I wrote an article about Eric on, is a very, very tiny part of the writing I do for my job. And I'm not a journalist at all. That just so happened that my company decided we could write some fun stuff. So I'm happy to write more articles about the comedy scene, but I'm here to try to do comedy myself, and that's the real shebang. Yeah.
Did we just have a workshop?
Just now?
Yes.
Yes, we did.
I can help you out with this. It's all about writing jokes. It's about having a notebook. It's about staying organized. And I always say writing a joke is like hypothesis. I think this is funny. Experiment on stage. And then when it's a fact that's funny, then it goes in a little other notebook called my first album. You know what I mean? So it's just a workflow. But staying disciplined like that amongst all the craziness, you know, a lot of comics are degenerates and pieces of shit and drug addicts. So to keep your, you know, to keep focused when all this craziness is, you know.
Yeah. I am an alcoholic myself. I'm in recovery. So I definitely, I fit into that category of addicts who are drawn to comedy. and just broken people in general.
You're drawn to the chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just love comedy so much. Like everyone loves comedy. It's like, who doesn't love to laugh? But I'm like, no, I love comedy, the industry. I've loved it for years. I've loved it since I was little, when I would watch Alf, you know?
Yeah. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Calabasas, California.
Oh.
Which makes a lot of people think that I grew up rich. That's almost always their immediate response. They're like, oh, so your parents are rich. And I'm like, nope. nope. Grew up there, but... not one of the rich people, not one of the people whose parents were producers or CEOs. Mm-hmm. My parents were not great with money. That's kind of my story. And then I went to Kansas to go to college because it was the cheapest school I got into. And that was crazy. Never thought I'd stay there, but I ended up living in Kansas City for almost 4 years. And I started comedy there pretty much. I started with improv, and then I went to stand-up, and then I moved here, because I was like, fuck, all my favorite comedians are moving, I'm gonna follow them. Mm-hmm. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I thought you were from Kansas. I didn't know you were from Calabasas.
Oh, really? No,
yeah. I didn't know you were from Cali, because, I lived there for 6 years. I lived in Los Angeles for 6 years.
Yeah, I grew up there. I lived in the same house my entire 18 years before I went to Kansas.
So, that's crazy. What did you, how is LA changing since when you grew up there?
So it's weird. Like, Calabasas, I'd like to put it out there. I just saw another new song called Calabasas on Spotify's, like, new rap music Friday or whatever. Calabasas is not a cool place. It's not something to brag about. But I see how it's become, like, sort of, like, Bel Air. Like, oh, it's, like, famous people live there, so it's cool to talk about it. Calabasas is a boring-ass town. It's super boring. It's just a suburb, and it's not like
the... And there's like that one ritzy strip mall with like the Rolex store and the Ralph Lauren place. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, it's bougie as hell. The Topanga Mall just gets bougier every time. Yeah. I love that. Every time I go back, there is another store that's been redone. Everything's turning into like white and black, as though like Kris Jenner is designing the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. It's like, that's great for people who have the money to go raise children, but don't act like you're like, Calabasas, wow, we're having so much fun, we're gonna go freaking eat Baskin Robbins, and we're gonna go and drive up a dusty hill and maybe smoke some weed. It's just like any other place, and it's not like Calabasas is 30 minutes away from LA, so it's not like we're city people. We're suburbanites. We're just as boring as everyone else. We don't have
It's just the valley. I mean, you're Northridge adjacent.
So I find when people say, like, L.A., I'm like, well, L.A. is such a big place that Calabasas is, like, such a tiny part of it. I don't have much to say about, like, how it's changed. So, I don't know. L.A.'s just always been a little intimidating to me. I really like... That's why I liked Kansas. It's, like, smaller.
You know everybody.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that feeling.
Yeah.
It's a lot less lonely. So,
when I was doing stand up in New Orleans, getting my degree, it's such a small town. There's like 340,000 people in it, and I was doing stand up every night that I was like literally getting recognized on the street. Like I was like, "Whoa, this is what it's like to be a famous person." But it's just a small town,
right? Big fish, small pond. That's a way to do it.
Like I remember, I was walking down the street, and this guy, like in a crappy suit, he was like, "Wait. Did I see you last night doing a stand-up show, you know?"
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, are you a public defender? And he goes, how do you know? I go, you have a shitty suit and you're right next to the courthouse. And he goes, and he's like, oh, well, thanks. And I'm like, what you're doing is more important. Keep that motherfucker out of jail, mom.
Yeah.
So it's like I was having interactions with people like this all the time.
Touching lives.
You know, with my stupid dick jokes. Yeah. So I moved here.
Yeah.
You know? February 2nd, February 7th, I had a catastrophic accident.
Yes, you did.
And then on the 9th, I was picked up from the hospital by Dr. Katie Houseman.
That's right.
That was like the first time we met in person because we did that whole interview. You wrote the whole article about me.
Oh, that's right. And then the first time
you saw me, I had a massive hematoma on the side of my head. Mm-hmm. I'd just been concussed. I had a, you know.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind that day?
So we established, I wrote an article about Eric when we were in separate states, so we'd only ever texted and been on the phone call, but then my good friend CJ, can we say his name?
Sure.
Obviously, you guys live together, so he was like, let's pick up Eric from the hospital, and I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun, this is gonna be pretty funny. When you were rolled out in a wheelchair by that female nurse, yeah. I started applauding for you because I thought that would be hilarious. The nurse was not amused, and I was just like, this is crazy. I honestly was just like, this is what I wanted. This is wild that, like, my day has turned into me and my friend are picking up my other friend who... I just think the story is so funny. I can't believe you got here and literally like 4 days later, you almost break your spine.
Yeah.
I just found the whole thing very funny.
No, I had a transverse process fracture, which is, you know, you have a cup and a disc and a cup and a disc. And then you have these like wings that hang off of your spine. And I snapped two of them off.
Yes.
And so it was fucking agony.
Have you already said on the podcast, like what happened that you...
I don't know. Maybe I talked about it with CJ was just on a podcast two podcasts ago.
Okay, cool.
But what you want? Should I say the story?
Well, yes. I think that's the funniest part.
It was just so hilarious to think about. It was so pathetic and stupid and just like embarrassing, but also makes me furious. You know, I was at a Super Bowl party. My other friend invites me, you know, from LA. An LA comic invites CJ and I to a Super Bowl party.
Right.
What could be more fun?
We've just moved to Austin. We're going to have a great time.
Yeah,
Super Bowl party.
CJ and I spent all the first week, like, hauling couches into the apartment and setting it up. And, you know, so, you know, we needed a little break. A little party sounded fucking great. So we go over there. You know, we're eating wings. There's nachos, you know, there's ribs, there's jalapeno poppers wrapped in bacon. Fucking great.
Yeah, the dream.
I mean, you know, we're watching people do touchdowns and throw the ball or something like that.
Oh, don't remind me of my sweet Chiefs. I don't want to hear about that part.
I don't remember much about the score or anything. And I go outside.
Were you getting litty? You were getting lit?
I was drinking beer, but we were eating wings. We were, you know.
Okay.
And so then I just go outside during the halftime show, and I go to lean on a banister. I'm a big leaner. I'm just in general. If there's something, you know,
You're a cool guy.
I'm a cool guy. I lean. I go, hey, what's up? You know?
Yeah.
So I go to lean on this banister, which immediately snaps open, and I fall, and then I landed on the banister, which was half propped up on the other side of the deck, and fucking, so it was like, I don't know, a fulcrum. I don't, is that a word that makes sense? I landed with my back, and then I got whipped down on my head, and I got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah.
like a World Star video.
Yeah, I'm so terrible because it's a... I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm very sorry that happened to you. That's awful. But goddamn, is it funny.
I know. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that lady who wrote that article. Remember that? Oh, yeah. She's coming. She's here now to pick you up.
Yeah.
So, speaking of articles, I'm going to read something.
Okay.
In about 7th and 8th grade, my friend Jeff Reeves and I would perform sketch comedy during our 30-minute recess. We called it the Eric and Jeff Show, and it took place in one of the school's classrooms. The audience would be packed. There would normally be around 60 students in there. We started filming sketches at my house and then edited all on VHS tapes. I sent one of these tapes to Saturday Night Live when I was 16 years old, around 2002. It was very deceptive cover letter. I was a good con artist. I knew how to wait my turn in science class to... I knew how to wait my turn in science class to make a dick joke, and I could sneak my way through certain gatekeepers to get something... to get on something as big as SNL.
Yeah.
Wow. What's that?
That is a direct quote from Eric Hollerbach himself in my article on poptonic.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is called "Can You Handle the Way Too Offensive Comedic Stylings of America? America Ferrera?" Eric Hollerbach.
Mm-hmm. And that, if you go to erichollerbach.com and you scroll down, right on the home page is a link to the article.
Oh, I am so... That's so sweet.
EricHollerbach.com. And then if you look at calendar, there's stand-up dates, there's all sorts of things.
It is a funny story, what Eric told me in that article. Like, the way you came up, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. My buddy Jeffries, it's like, you were saying that you always loved doing comedy, you were a fan of it. Like, in 7th and 8th grade, you know, middle school, before high school, me and my buddy would film sketches at our house, and one of them was like, I don't know, like we would do stuff like throw a dummy out of my window of my suburban house and watch it fall, and then like, you know, lay on the ground, like cut the tape, lay on the ground, and then be like, oh, that, like pretending that you fell out the window. Like, we just did the campiest special effects, you know, and it was fun. Like, we had this one where it was like, my friend Jeff Reeves was behind me in the shot, and I was like, I picked up, I was like, oh, what is this? This looks like a doll. Oh, what if I punched it in the arm? And then my friend behind me was like, ow, ow, like it was a voodoo doll. And then I was like, this thing is worthless, and I threw it, and then he went flying. So we just did this, like, this campiest, like, sketch show. But it was this weird thing where, like, every Monday or whatever it was, the whole school would pack into a classroom and we'd put the VHS tape in, and me and my shitty friend would do, you know, have these sketches. So.
Yeah. At the time, it's the prime of technology, so.
Oh, yeah. And I had two VHS, players on top of each other, and I would hook one to the other and then hit play and record on the bottom one.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I edited. You know, play, record on the bottom one.
So you're like 89 years old?
Yeah.
About?
40. This, what year
that was
that?
That was meaner than I usually know. That was rude.
1998?
I'm a nice person.
Oh, I'm 35.
You're so young. You are so young.
In concussion years, I'm much older.
Oh, dear.
I really still feel, like, slippery from that.
Really?
Like, I'm not gonna, like, for 6 days, I felt kind of retarded.
Yeah.
But now I feel, like, mostly back to normal, but, anyway.
I'm glad to see you at least, like, physically able to walk.
Yeah.
You didn't come here and you're, like, paralyzed.
Well, I've been going to physical therapy, you know.
Damn.
So I've been, because I had that spine fracture, you know, now I'm in a physical therapy office where they put, like, a bouncy ball between my legs and I squeeze it and I turn all sorts of ways.
Wow.
3 days a week.
I admire you for doing that shit. It's like, I imagine if I came here and I almost broke my back, I think I would just be like, maybe this is being in your mid-20s, but I don't know, I'd probably be like, Just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, time to go home.
Is this God telling me that I shouldn't have come here? Like, but you just handled it. It's very, like, I'm like, that's a mature,
yeah, like, when I was at, yeah, when I was at the University of New Orleans, like, I got arrested and I got thrown in jail. Did I tell you this story?
I feel like you might have. I don't know.
Yeah, I was putting up posters for a comedy show, and then a meter maid mistook my staple gun with a handgun.
Oh.
One thing leads to another. I'm in Orleans Parish Prison.
Yeah.
In an orange jumpsuit with a mattress in my hand, walk into my bunk, and some guys are going, "Fresh meat, fresh meat." And then I said to them, "I think I ordered like the not rape cell." And then they all laughed, and then I played cards all night, but they were just, like, punk testing me to see if they could scare me, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But I was like, I'm gonna get raped for a staple gun right now, you know what I mean?
So you've had worse, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, I called my dad, it was like, Orleans Parish Prison, call from, Dad! It's been, you know what I mean? Like, at 3 a.m, I called my dad, like, I'm in jail, like, call a fucking lawyer right now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he bailed me out, but then, oh my God.
It was a staple gun.
Yeah. And I just, if you can't make that one phone call from jail and activate a family member, like, I saw people that were in there, like, when I was chain ganged in front of the judge the next morning for sentencing. Like, one guy's like, oh, I had, like, you know, a gram of pot. Okay, you know, 30 days in jail. Next. Like, and I was like, oh, fuck. Like, you know what I mean?
Because
that guy had no lawyer. He had no, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I got a DUI a couple years ago in the state of Missouri. And going through that court process, it was very sad. I luckily did not have to go to jail. But I did have to do a lot of probation requirements. But yeah, being in the courthouse several times was a very interesting look into how fucked it all is.
Yeah. Did you see other people just like...
Oh, it was packed every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And it was like people's phones would be ringing. And this is like, like inner city Kansas City, Missouri, which is like... a lot of black people, so it was kind of, like, definitely seeing, like, when you're the only white girl in the courtroom, you're like, oh, I see now what people are saying about the system being pretty fucked.
Yeah.
And, you know, the judge is, like, yelling to the person whose phone ring, like, turn your phone off! And people are dressed in, like, you know, like, they just rolled out of bed.
Yeah.
So I felt lucky, like, that I just had a... I didn't have to go through, like, the jail experience, because even just being in the courtroom and seeing how sad some of those cases were and the way that they were just pushed around by the judge and all that.
And then, so I showed up to all my appointments on time in a fucking suit, right? And so my lawyer shows up for, like, a status hearing, a discovery hearing, which is, like, what's the status of the case? Okay, the you know, let's do, you know, the trial will be this day or this and that, or all parties have all the evidence, blah, blah, blah. Okay, go home.
Yep.
It's, like, you're just going to court over and over for status hearing, discovery hearing, you know, whatever. But then when the trial happened, my lawyer wasn't there that morning.
Of course.
And I was texting her going... I'm here. And then she goes, oh, I had to be there for a friend. I go, fuck your fucking friend.
In
the face and asshole right now. Come to court. I'm going to go to fucking jail right now.
You
dumb bitch.
This is your job, I thought.
So then, you know, then it went back to status hearing.
Yeah.
Show up to court. Discovery hearing. Show up to court. Trial. Doesn't show up to the trial twice.
Yeah.
So she sent a paralegal down and whispered in the judge's ear, blah, 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 blah. Judge Peter Sens, S-E-N-S. And I'm watching this paralegal.
Follow him on social media.
Like, not my lawyer going, I'm sorry she's not here. She had a family emergency. And I hear him, like, audibly go, I don't give a fuck about her family emergency. We scheduled this trial twice. That's it. And I'm going, oh, my God, I'm going to jail. Oh, my God, I'm going to jail for a fucking staple gun. And then, so then we just fired her. We hired another one.
Then
it went, and then he showed up to another status. He showed up to another discovery.
Yeah.
Then we had a trial, and then another trial, and then and as soon as the staple gun was in the courtroom, it was over. The judge is like, the judge also watched me in a suit show up a dozen times to his court, And then when the staple gun's in the room, he's like, that's what this kid is fucking here for. Get this bullshit out of here. So I was just like,
yep.
It was the easiest case. And then the amount of time, energy, and effort it was to get rid of it. Like, is that your experience? How many times did you have to go to court?
Yeah, that was pretty much exactly it. And that, to show, like, for years being about a staple gun, that shows how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
Like, unreal that wasted time, wasted resources. But yeah, mine would be, I think I went to court at least 4 or 5 times, and I had a similar thing, like, once my lawyer couldn't make it, but he sent another lawyer in, and then once the person, it was the court's fault, like, the court secretary or something, I can't remember what it's called, like, that person didn't show up, so they had to cancel all whatevers for the day, and I was, like, working at a corporate company, this is before my current job, and so I was freaking taking days off to go to court.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not telling my boss, like, hey, this is what's up. But
right,
I'm,
right.
like, sorry that, again, I have to take a random day off in the middle of the week.
Right,
and
right.
it's like, I'm not getting to vacation, you know? It's not, like, a fun time. I'm going to freaking court. And so, yeah, that fucking sucked. I was like, you're making me use these vacation days. God, I feel like I sound like such... I really have, like, a worry about
sounding too
privileged. And...
It's not privileged. It's look at all this bullshit you had to go through. For,
yeah.
You know? And then it's like you show up to court and then, oh, the statistician of, you know, crimes is not here today. So everyone go home.
Right. Like,
it's like, what is that person doing? What is that person doing?
Right.
I don't know. Send a cop to their house. Beat the shit out of them and drag them here like all these other people have had to do today.
Yeah, it's...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it taught me a lot.
Nobody wants to be here. So show up if it's your fucking job. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So was that what was your DUI in Missouri?
Missouri.
What sort of got you thinking, oh, maybe I have a problem here? Was that, like, rock bottom for you, where you're like, I have to address this and start going to meetings?
No, actually. The DUI was it was in December of 2018, and I had already been, I would say, hardcore alcoholic probably for about a year and a half before that. And so I was recognizing that I was having issues, but I was also, like, hating my life and going through just really bad feelings, and I was like, I'm gonna drink them away, and I don't really care. And then I got the DUI, and that was horrifying. It was terrible, but it did not stop me from drinking at all. It did not get me to be like...
Did the court mandate you to go to AA or anything?
No, but I did end up going... I had to do a 50-hour course called SATOP, which is Substance Abuse Traffic Offenders Program, which is, so 50 hours, it was like 2 days a week, like 3-hour night classes, something crazy like that. I had to like start over a bunch of times, and then COVID hit and that fucked it all up. So it felt like it took like 3 years. That was really what got me the education of being in that program and having like somebody who was once a crack addicted person, but they're 30 years clean. Be teaching you this course about you are an alcoholic. The fact that this happened to you, I was put in the one for people who had gotten 3 DUIs or more, because I had my breathalyzer when I got pulled over was 0.25. So because it was that level, they're like, you're going with the big boys.
Right.
So yeah, that was really what started to push
me. So it was a 0.08. Was the legal limit.
0.08 is the legal limit.
And then so you hit a 0.23, so you're...
0.25.
Triple over it.
Yeah. I was blacked out for almost the entire time that I was pulled over. I have no recollection of anything.
Did you damage your car? Were you, like, on the curb, like, hitting, like, telephone poles one after the other, and then you're like, what's the officer problem?
What's the officer problem? No, what? Luckily, I honestly have no idea what happened, but my car was totaled. I did not have a scratch on me, and I apparently hit somebody, which I don't remember, but I imagine that's how I totaled my car. They were okay. So I think what happened maybe was I was trying to, like, I know where the area where I was in, and it was a place where I was able to make a turn, so I'm thinking maybe I was like, I'm too drunk, and maybe I tried to do a turn, but maybe it was like very slow, and I just like slowly like crushed into someone. I don't know someone's how cars car work.
Or someone's
someone
person.
In a car. Right, yeah, right. I always have to clarify that, which makes it so much better. But yeah, I don't know how my car got as battered as it was, because we went and saw it in the tow dump, whatever, the mm-hmm. next day, and I was like, what the fuck? Mm. So yeah, but I don't remember what I did or what happened.
Did you get knocked out?
No.
From the accident?
I was just blacked out drunk. That's what happened. Yeah. I left. I was working as a waitress, and you could drink pretty freely. It was understood, like, keep your shit together, like, do your job. And But I got so fucking drunk that I was like, I need to leave early. Mm. And a lot of people ask me, like, why didn't anyone stop you? And I'm like, I'm pretty good at kind of, like, seeming sober, even when I'm really fucked up. Mm. So.
You just put on a smile. It's Missouri. Mm-hmm. Bye, nice lady.
Oh, yeah. I'm lucky because Kansas and Missouri are so close to each other in Kansas City. If I had gotten the DUI in Kansas, I might have had to do much worse punishment.
Oh, because so you were on the Missouri side, and those cops are more lenient.
Oh, yeah, the whole system is in Missouri. It's like, if you're going to get a DUI and you're in Kansas City, do it in Missouri. That is my advice to you.
What was spiraling you out of control? What did you get your degree in, first of all?
I got my degree in creative writing at KU, graduated in 2017, and yeah.
And then what? And then you're waitressing.
And then
you're like, why can't I use my degree and just be a great novelist?
I don't want to be a novelist anymore. That was like third grade, Katie. I'm like, fuck writing now. I want to be like an editor. I don't anymore. I want to be a comedian now. But I'm writing because I like to and whatever, it pays the bills. But the alcoholism was just, I think, in me. I think it's just, I have an addictive personality. And then when I moved to Kansas City, I was actually working as a tutor for an AmeriCorps program called City Year. And so that shit was bananas. I didn't realize that when you work for a not-for-profit, like City Year, AmeriCorps type thing, you're basically getting paid like $4 an hour, working 10-hour days, doing stuff for the good of the community. But I was like, I didn't know this is what it was. And I met this guy, and it was the first guy who had ever been super, like, sweet to me, and he was attractive. And I was like, I'd never had a boyfriend before, and I was new to the city, very nervous. So I was like, let me attach to this guy. Mm. He's really nice to me, and it's like a friend to have here. And he was an alcoholic, which we didn't know at the time, but we totally, like, enabled each other, and then shit just got real bad from there, and I was just drinking like a fucking maniac. Mm. And I knew it was a problem for a really, really long time, but it really is, like, until you're ready to stop, you're not going to. Mm-hmm. You have to want to stop, and I didn't. I was like, this does suck. It really fucking sucks being an alcoholic and being hungover all the time. But also there's, like, some great comfort in it, and
It pumps the brakes of your spiraling thoughts. So you're like, no, I'm using this to medicate, but then it starts using you, right?
Yeah, it totally, it's like, and you just start feeling horrible, because if you never give yourself that break, like normal people do, to recover, for me it became like, oh, my anxious, my horrible thoughts get worse when I'm hungover. But instead of waiting that out, I would just be like, well, I'll just drink more. Mm. So that didn't really stop until about 4 months ago, when I was starting to, like, really slack off at my job. And I could, like, my liver was hurting. I could feel it. And I just knew, I was like, this will kill me if I don't stop soon.
And that program from that crackhead before starts ringing in your head.
Absolutely. I actually, like, I really need other people sometimes to, like, confirm things for me, because otherwise I'll just overthink and be like, well, I don't know, like, who I am. And so before I left that program, I asked the guy, I was like, so just to confirm, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And I knew the answer, and he was like, he just looked at me, he was like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's all I need to know. Like, this former crackhead told me I'm a severe alcoholic.
Right.
So now I can go forward with my life in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta know how your brain works. Like, I was dying. Well, when I was in New Orleans, I was always chasing these crazy ladies. And then my therapist, I was, like, spiralingly depressed. And my therapist, like, prints out, like, what codependent personality disorder is.
There you go.
And then he's like, give this a read. And then I was like, oh, that's how I've been operating all the time, where I'm like, you know, oh, I'll drive you to work, I'll cook for you, I'll take care of whatever you need, you know. Absolutely. You need me to do your laundry, no problem. Oh, you cheated on me 90 times? Why did that happen? And then it's like, yeah. When I read this thing, it's like, you're only attracted to emotionally unavailable narcissists, yep. Number one.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, like, and I was like, oh, like, that's why crazy girls make my dick hard.
Yeah, yep, so same. Anyway. No, I think we talked about it on the phone when I was interviewing you.
Okay, yeah.
I could just tell by the way you were speaking, I was like, oh, you have a narcissistic parent. Because I have a narcissistic parent. And I also have codependency issues. That boyfriend I was telling you about, the one where we were enabling each other, the way that relationship ended was him getting super drunk at a restaurant. I had to call his mom to come pick him up. She called me later and said, you need to stop talking to my son. You're a codependent junkie. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that, like, word. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, bitch? And I'm, like, drunk, you know? I'm like, this hoe, get out of here. But now I'm like, oh my God, she was exactly right. And then learning what codependency is, and I'm the exact same way. So I have to be careful. I'm like, stop this. Don't feed into that feeling.
Mm-hmm. So are you a serial monogamous? I know, you know, I don't want to touch too much on this, but I met somebody who was your boyfriend at one time.
Yeah.
Seemed like a nice guy.
He's extremely sweet, yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, did not work out. I guess it was long distance. How are you doing emotionally now with all that we've been talking about?
I am doing okay. It sucked. It was awful because, I don't know, it was a nice relationship and I really care about him a lot. But it was the first time that I kind of had to make a decision for myself and even possibly not know the outcome or know if I'm making the right decision. But I knew, I don't know, I was just like, the timing was really bad because he obviously doesn't live in Austin and I moved here, and I kind of just like, for the sake of my comedy, I feel like comedy is helping me explore myself and be honest with myself and not, you know, pretend to be a different person to please somebody else, whoever it may be. And that, because, like, I don't think I find the funny unless I'm being completely raw and honest. And I was like, I just can't be in this relationship that I'm not fully 100% sure about and still be funny and still explore my comedy in the way I want to. So I've been, it hurts. The first cut is the deepest, I guess they say. Sheryl Crow, was that her? I don't know. It hurts real bad, but I'm trying to stay busy and trying to, like, appreciate that I have friends and stuff around me, but I'm also a sensitive little bear, and I have a problem. This might be the codependency. I want everyone in the world to love me the most. That's what I truly want.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty irrational, crazy thing. Like, that's why I think, like, I shouldn't date for a while, except like casual maybe things, because I don't think I'm like emotionally ready.
And you know, how do I say this? I've met people similar to you, and I always find that when girls sort of go from one relationship to another relationship to another relationship, even, you know, long term or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you don't have time to learn what the fuck you want, because you spend all your time, and I would distract myself, like spend all my time pouring to make somebody else happy.
Yes.
Just pouring, and even when it's not working, I'm like pushing this like love rock up a hill, and it's arduous. And then when I go, okay, I don't want to do, like, when I would break up with people, then later on I go, God, my schedule is just so open. I'm going to play frisbee golf today. I'm going to write jokes. I'm going to work on my old screenplay. And I'm like, where did all this time come from?
Right.
That I was with this emotionally abusive person, like, you know, so I would be with them, and then I would spiral, and then I would cry, and then I would sleep, and then I'd pick them up and drive them to work the next day.
Yep.
And, like, my days were always packed with making them, pleasing them, so that they would make me happy. I would, like, put my happiness onto them like a fucking kidney stone. You know what I mean?
For them. Absolutely. So, my first relationship was like that, for sure. I was doing... That guy owes me over $1,000 for sure. So fuck you. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're in recovery. Probably not. But fuck you, that guy.
Yeah. Who threw up at the restaurant and embarrassed everybody.
Yeah, almost like picked a fight with somebody that was like giving him an eye. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Anyway. What was I going to say? I was exactly like that though. Just like doing everything. He was like lying to me. Said he had a job. Didn't have a job. Just, yeah, ridiculous. And I'm really, really good at being alone. So it's weird. I have to like be careful if someone like gives me that feeling of like a little tingle but I have to be careful because probably like you, that little tingle might be, oh, this reminds me of my bitchy ass mom. And that's why they don't like me enough. So I need to please them so that they like me.
I gotta prove something.
Exactly.
Right.
It's like, it's weird to not be comfortable in a relationship with somebody who just really actually cares about you and doesn't expect anything of you. You're like, where's your fire? Where's your whatever? Mm. So I'm trying to be better at that, but also, I just think I need some time to do some self-exploring.
What do you mean by fire?
Like, I think people with troubled, who grew up with the wrong type of love being demonstrated to them or weren't loved properly as your parents should, that gives you a fucked up version. That gives you a fucked up expectation of how a relationship should be, because your first, like, experiences with love are from your parents. So if you're like, my parents make me feel like I need to work for their love, I don't feel comfortable unless I'm with someone who makes me work for their love. And that's where that, the chemistry. But it's like... That's not chemistry. That's your fucked up little childhood self being like, I wish I had a mom that loved me.
Or like, didn't. So if I could fix this person, okay, they don't love me now, but I could fix them and I could work towards them and I could do things for them and then they'll give me the love that my mommy never did.
Right. Or somehow if they love me, then I'm okay. I've learned a lot through that.
Yeah.
I'm also bi, so I want to just, like, fuck a lot of people and see what's going on with that first. Because, like, that's something you got to take care of before you jump into anything too serious, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy. With my parents, what's flashing in my head is I was telling my friend Kyle Woods this the other day, like on my mom's side, right? So I have one aunt who's, like, a black tar heroin hooker with AIDS.
Sounds like a cool girl.
Super cool. She actually was, when she was younger, you know, she was the fiance to a doctor, like this guy in med school, right?
Oh, damn.
And she was like, well, oh, yeah, that's my boyfriend, that's my fiance, whatever, would go do black tar heroin and hook and got AIDS and gave it to him.
Oh, shit.
And then he killed himself.
Oh, my God.
So my family, you know, when they fuck up, they shoot for the stars. I have another aunt who's, you know, a wino in North California. And then my other aunt, you know, all sisters, like, she just bakes.
Yeah.
She's like, everything's fine. I made just bread cookies. Just, like, stacks of cookies. And yep. It's like, well, she's, you know.
This is how she lets out her pain.
Shout out to my Aunt Colleen, my favorite aunt.
Shout out.
The greatest cook in the family.
Aw, Colleen.
So sweet. I love her very much.
Aw.
Shout out to Uncle Jim, too.
When
I'm in Jersey, we'll go fishing.
I love my family. They fucked me up, but I'm not... I'm still fine. I still love them.
So, are you a good driver?
Is this a CJ-based question?
I don't know who that is or what you're talking about. So you woke up in Missouri, and your car exploded, and you're like, what? And you got a DUI, and you blew an epic You know?
Wait, so you're asking me if I'm a good driver now?
Yeah, but, and then now I hear, I don't know, I hear something about a tire exploding downtown.
Let
and
me
I
tell
heard
you.
Something about a fender bender the other day in a parking lot, you know, I'm hearing stories.
Let me tell you the common denominator in the things that happened, these stories that Eric has been hearing. I did pop my tire, go into an open mic, and I did get into a fender bender the other day. But I just backed into someone in a CVS parking lot. It was a scuff, and I paid them through. We won't talk about it.
You said.
Now, let me say the common denominator in those two situations is that your roommate was in the car with me. And your roommate is the most annoying backseat driver I've ever been with. I've never been with someone who reminds me more of when I was learning to drive, and my mom was in the passenger seat, like, gripping that handle thing and being like, you know, like, he's constantly freaking out. And I blame him. I blame his nervous energy for these mishaps because he, okay, now I feel like I have to say I don't really blame him. I know it was my fault. I think I am a good driver, but he is an annoying person to be with in the car because he's like constantly backseat driving and he's always like, and like, I got really pissed off when the fender bender happened. You know about this because I walked into your house like right after. But what happened was, I'm backing into this car after doing a favor for your roommate, which I really genuinely am happy to do. I love him. I love him. He's one of my closest friends here, which is why I feel okay saying these things. But I backed out. I hit the car. And he just goes, "Oh my God, Katie!" And that just trigger, that my brain immediately flipped, because if somebody even gives me like an inkling of scolding me, that takes me back to being a child and my mother saying something like, "Oh my God, Katie," and my
Katie, the macaroni salad, it's all over the floor.
More
it's
just
on
like,
my credenza.
More just like, you did something wrong and you should feel ashamed for it. That scolding tone. And it's like, I know that's not what he meant. And anyone who is in a passenger seat when someone hits a car is probably going to say, "Oh my God." But I got triggered and I got furious and I was like, "How about you shut the fuck up, because it's my car and it's my life and you don't have to tell me about how the legal system works, because I've been in the legal system and I got a DUI and so you could shut the fuck up." And, like, I was just so furious because he, like, kind of scolded me. But I have done enough therapy to recognize that he had no malicious intent and it was okay. But I can't handle that shit. Like, if you're in a car with me and I get in a fender bender, you need to just close your mouth. Or I will snap. I have a lot of anger inside me.
I can it's starting to bubble up. Like, your eyes are going red. So yeah. I'm going to back off of this conversation.
No, I'm fine. No, I'm a lot angrier than people expect because I'm a pretty nice person. But I hold a lot of trauma in me.
Yeah, so. that classic Hausman rage. That patented Hausman fury.
You betcha.
So how are you doing with the line item? Speaking of your car, you were telling me the other day, "Oh, I got to go to the DMV. I got to get my license. I got to get my registration. I got to switch my insurance over. Yeah. I got to call my taxidermist." How's all that going?
It's going okay. I'm procrastinating. I usually leave things till the 11th hour. I don't know why. You can see I checked off get Texas car insurance.
Good.
Yeah, my next thing is, but I did that like 3 weeks ago, so the next step has taken a lot. Kind of boils down to, like, if you have a paper due, you don't write it till the night before. It's kind of how I live my life. So we're doing okay. We're getting there.
you still have Missouri plates?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got Jersey plates. But in my, I'm telling you, like, when I walked in there, and they're like, "Do you have an apartment?" You know, frog lady. Bah, 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 bah. You know what I mean? With the jowls. Bah, 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 you know, and they're not moving an inch in the chair.
Yeah.
And I was like, "No." She's like, "Come back and die me." You know what I mean? I'm like, "God damn." You know what I mean? Like,
can't you just do it online? What are you going to the place for?
When you get the plates, you got to show up and you have to have an appointment. When you re-register, That you can do online.
Okay.
Because re-registering is just a sticker that you put on the plate or you put in the corner of your windshield to say, this, my plate is continuing. And by the way, California is the most egregious. Like, right, you get your plates, it's like $250 for fucking Cali plates, right? Mm-hmm. And then to register it, it's $135 a year. And you're like, to keep this in your computer? That's still my plate?
Yeah.
They're like, it doesn't, just assume I still have that car and assume the plates are still on it. No, we got it. You got to give $135. It's like a tax on the plates that they gave you, fucking, that you paid for $250 every year to, like, oh my God.
This, I mean, I don't understand why people are leaving California. I mean, it's just, it's such a great place in every way.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, then it's like the homelessness, the misery is just peaking and they're like $150 to re-register. And here it's $50.
Why,
you know?
Why would anyone leave? I don't get it. It's weird.
I know. Super weird. Calabasas, bro. Smoke weed or go to the mall. Get in my Pumas.
Yeah.
It's so cool here.
So freaking cool. You got Sagebrush Cantina. Maybe see a TikToker. That's awesome.
Yeah. You ever TikTok in an In-N-Out? I'm not a basic bitch, I promise.
Can I just say I feel really bad. Like, CJ is going to be mad at me for what I said about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say I'm sorry. That was a classic Katie putting herself, blaming someone else for her own insecurities. And I'm sorry, CJ. And I love you.
Well, CJ, take the garbage out, you cocksucker.
Yeah, you say some shit. Totally. Means.
Can you refill the Brita when you fucking use the Brita? Oh, my God. Not only does he never refill the Brita, okay, ever.
That shit pisses me never. Off when I had a roommate. Oh,
and
my God.
And then we have this ice tray. We have a separate fucking Pyrex that, you know, I got at a thrift store. He didn't have anything to do with. Great. And then, like, every time I open the lid, ice gone.
Not refilled.
Can you refill the ice tray and then then pour it into the thing? No, he takes, scoops everything out, pours the water in, falls asleep, and it's like, I'm glad you live a wonderful, beautiful life where your feet never touch the ground.
You guys are funny roommates to watch.
Oh my God.
I've had some bad roommate experiences, so I feel your pain of just doing that.
Did I dream this, or did you look inside the refrigerator the other day?
Oh, you showed me. Yeah, you showed me the Dubai.
What does the refrigerator look like for people that...
So, on the left side is Eric's side, and mm-hmm. every shelf is full. Eric has all these, like, prepped meals and, like, bacon and Whole Foods. Not Whole Foods, a store, but, like, Whole Foods. I feel like you eat a lot of, like, you know, healthy shit. And then CJ's side is, like... 2 gallons of Arizona tea and, like, maybe one little, like, Pedialyte. I don't even know what it was. And then, like, a Lunchable or something like that. Which just shows you guys
are
too little.
Yeah, a pizza Lunchable, you know?
Yeah, you guys should just...
He will not be enslaved to cook for himself.
Oh, yeah. You guys should just, like, film your everyday happenings, because that'd be funny to watch.
Yeah, and I don't know why you texted me. Like, you know, we had this appointment to do this podcast, and then... You texted me last night and then this morning, like, is it still going on? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we said it once and then I just run that like a program.
Maybe I'm not used to like mature, like adults. Like I don't know. I just get nervous. I'm like, what if he forgot or what if he could change his plans? I don't know. So I just like to make sure. Cause like, if I could have slept in, I would have. I'm happy I didn't.
But you've, come over the house a few times to see my roommate, and he's always ready to go, right?
Oh, yeah, he's never ready
to go. Fill
the
Brita, cocksucker, and you won't get this scolding. All right, can I tell you a story about, cars?
Sure.
From New Orleans?
Sure.
All right, so speaking of license plates, speaking of all this stuff, you know, so I was Uber driving, during grad school, and, I started getting speed camera tickets because they installed these robots everywhere, right?
Uh-oh.
And so let's say you're in a 35-mile-an-hour zone. You drive by the speed camera at 36, boom, ticket in the mail, ticket in the mail, ticket in the mail, ticket in the mail. So when you're driving people drunk people home and you're trying to like then go home and do homework, you're trying to turn and burn. You're trying to get all the, you know, all these people. Okay, all right, get in the car. Okay, go. Okay. And not to mention, like, in New Orleans, I'm sort of resentful because, you know, getting my degree, I'm like driving, I'm like chauffeuring people with like, you know, these rich kids in Tulane, you know, that like their tuition's paid for, their whatever, and then they have like all this drinking money on top, and like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They're like their Illuminati parents are just like, whatever. Oh, good job, you're taking an Uber home. And then I show up like, hello, you know. And so I was like constantly like facilitating people to have fun.
Yeah.
And I can never have fun because I would just watch people get hammered and with no responsibility. And I would just drive them to the Bayou Bugaloo or whatever fucking dipshit thing they were up to. And I could never go in a raft and get drunk and do the Bayou Bugaloo because I had to, you know, when the prices were surging. So I was always like, but like chronically missing out all the time, you know? And also like that was how I was paying my rent, you know? But it did sort of train me to be, you know, I don't know, functional and punctual. But when I started getting all these speed cameras in the mail, it's like, you know, it got to like $7,000
of
speed camera tickets. Because I would get, I don't know, a dozen a day. I'm not joking.
And you didn't think
and they're
to
like
maybe
fucking
like,
120 each.
You didn't chill it out after the first one?
No, fuck that. I'm not telling the robots can't tell me what to do. So then, okay, so I got 7,000 tickets in the mail. So then I showed up to a hearing to go, you know, stick all these tickets in your ass, you know, right to the man. So I went down to City Hall.
Yeah.
You know, a public defender recognized me. Did you do stand-up last night? Yeah, don't worry about it. You know, I walk in, you know.
Shut up. Walk, kick the door
one
open.
Of my fans, you know, whatever. So I walk in there, and then they go, you know, you owe $7,000, but we'll be nice. Let's just say you owe $3,500 and give it to us in a week. And I go, how about I'm going to give you none of this money because my Sixth Amendment right is to face my accuser. Where's the robot? And they said, what are you talking about? I go, the robot in the sky gave me this ticket. So take the robot off its perch. I want to look its glassy eyes in the fucking robot eye. And then face my accuser. And they go, sir, we're going to show you a video of you making an illegal turn. I go, I don't know who borrowed my car. I lend my car out to everybody all the time. I don't know who was driving that day. You know what I mean? I was just being so infuriating to them. But that is true.
Did that work? Did you get out of this?
So then, it's a whole long story, right? So then it said on the ticket, John Carr. C-A-R-R, Officer John Carr. I go, this is not a real person. Where's John Carr? Like, John Carr looked in the robot, and now I'm talking to the city, like, administrator person. You know what I mean? Where's John Carr? I get to face my accuser. You can't just take my Sixth Amendment right and flush it down the fucking toilet. Do you have an apartment? This fucking, you know,
I'm personally. Learning what the Sixth Amendment is.
Yes,
this is great.
Very important. They're all over San Antonio, by the way, speed cameras. If you're ever in San Antonio for any reason. But so then I followed the forensic trail, and it's a company called Photo Safety in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona. Mm. So John Carr, whether he exists or not, though I'm sure that's an alias for some dummy, you know, sitting in Phoenix, Arizona, who has no jurisdiction over New Orleans. You can't outsource politics to a private policing to a private company. And that's what they did. This private, completely illegal in every way, shape, or form. So, but then I was at the Howlin' Wolf one day doing stand-up. I parked my car, you know, and then it got towed. But luckily, they misprinted my ID. So my address was 2043 P.O. Box, University of New Orleans. But on my license, it said 243. So I walk into another administrative thing, or like to get my car out of the lot, you know, I found another administrative person. I was just there, you know, a month earlier yelling at some lady. But then I came back and I go, I didn't get one of these tickets. What are you talking about? You towed my car. I didn't get one ticket. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, look at my license. This is my official Louisiana driver's license, 243. Where did you guys send it? And they go, oh, we sent it to 2043. I go, I didn't get one. I just lied. I didn't get one of these tickets. So he goes, All right, here, this piece of paper will get your car out of the lot for free. We'll reissue the tickets, and then you can pay them that way. I go, thank you. I didn't get one of these tickets. What are you talking about? Just lied, you know?
Uh-huh.
So then, I'm Uber driving late at night. I pick up this guy. He's covered in glitter. He's like, dressed like a green Chewbacca, like, in glitter, like, you know? And it was a drunk council member, like a city council person. Drunk. He was hitting on me, like this gay, drunk, dressed like a fairy city
wow.
council member, right?
Hot.
So I told him my whole story, and he goes, oh, yes, just get a new license plate. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. So the only way they can tow your car is if this robot will go around and scan all the license plates, and if you have too many tickets, then they'll tow you. But if you get a new license plate, then they can find you. So then that's what I did. So then I got a vanity plate, University of New Orleans vanity plate. Every time I parked, I took my plates off, my dirty plates, and then I put the vanity plate on. That was clean as a nun's pussy. Never did I drive with the University of New Orleans plates. So they were clean. I had zero. And then I just, every time I parked. And then all of the speed camera tickets were wiped out because constitutional lawyers went in there and said, Sixth Amendment right. This is institutionally circumventing everyone's Sixth Amendment right. And they discontinued the program.
Stans, you're a hero.
I was the tip of the spear. And look, if they're going to circumvent your rights, you don't pay for the shit. That's it. You got to know where you stand in this world and fight.
Good for you, man.
I'm not going, what am I going to go back to jail and then have a status hearing and discovery hearing and this and that, you know?
No. You just lie until
you just
eventually
lie.
Things work out.
Yeah, you lie. You're nonviolently just not participating in the scam.
You were right.
And also, like, you know, my car payment, like, you know what I mean? Just the levels of slavery. I owe on my car payment. I owe on my credit card. Now, in order to Uber drive, I have to pay the robots? Fuck all that shit. Like, you know what I mean? I can only deal with so much burden.
Yeah. You were pushed to your limit.
And also, out of a $135 ticket, $90 goes to fucking Phoenix, Arizona. And the city only got $40, but they're like, we don't have to do anything. Just send us the 40. So they put out these robots that vampirize everyone's money. Most of it goes to Phoenix and doesn't go back into their own city. New Orleans is so fucked up.
Come on, New Orleans. What the fuck is going on?
Like, you know, they don't want to... not a lot of work ethic goes on.
Can I say something?
Sure.
You have such an interesting accent. It sounds almost like you're from somewhere else. And there's, like, been, like, 40 words that you said, and I probably every time I'm with you where I just want to, like, repeat it because it sounds so funny to me.
No, I'm from Jersey, but then I lived in New Orleans, then I lived in fucking L.A., and, you know, I don't know.
I feel like if we lived in, like, pilgrim times in the 13 original colonies, like, that's what a lot of people would sound like. There'd be, like, a part of town where everyone sounds like you.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. We're just like, oh, we're back home in our home country.
Yes, I have not found the country I'm from yet, but one day. I don't know. Jersey plus trauma equals my accent.
You gotta do 23andMe. See what's going on.
Oh, I know what I am. My dad is just German-Irish. My mom's Italian.
Oh, okay.
That's about it.
Okay.
Go to poptonic.com. Read some of Dr. Katie Hausman's work. How can people find you?
Yeah, I would say Pop Tonic, read the Eric article. That's not really, like, my mojo. Follow me on Instagram at Katie Hausman, CATIEHOUSMAN. There is no E in Hausman, as bad as you want to put it there. Don't do it. If you want to follow my journey as an alcoholic, you can also follow Boozy Bish, which you can just find on my regular Instagram page, but that's where I post about, like, my journey as an alcoholic. And I also have my own podcast with my brother called Father Forgive Us, and that is anywhere you find your podcast, we talk a lot about family of origin issues. Our dad is a born-again Christian, though we are raised culturally Jewish, or we're raised culturally Jewish. And my dad is now married to a female pastor, so that's where we get the name Father Forgive Us, and we have a lot to say. And we're fun, we're a good time, so.
Father Forgive Us on iTunes and all platforms.
All platforms, wow. Baby, we are on all platforms. We have 3 million listeners right now, so that's cool.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely a fact, and nobody look that up, okay?
Please go to ericallerbach.com, click the stand-up specials link, check out conspiracies and dick jokes, fart porn in beer halls, and it's a medical device. Also, there's a little link there for a company called ACBD Remedy, and you could get CBD oil. And if you go to CBD Remedy, you order some CBD oil, you can type in promo code ERIC at checkout for 20% off. Whoa.
20% off.
20% off.
Wow, yeah, that is cool. And also, so you pronounce it Hollerbach.
Bach, yeah.
Okay, I've been saying Hollerbach.
Everyone says that, okay. So I'm like, I listened to a podcast that I was on yesterday, and I said Hollerbach, just because, like, it's just easier. Everyone calls me Hollerbach, so it's like, you know.
Okay, okay.
But yeah, technically, like, I'm German, and it's, like, my dad's German, you know, so it's Hollerbach. And actually, there's a town in Germany called Hollerbach.
Wow, okay.
By the way, fun fact, I found another Eric Hollerbach. He lives in Toledo, Ohio.
My brother used to live there.
So I phoned him up and I go, Eric Hollerbach. And he was like, Eric Hollerbach. I was like, whoa. And then
That's such a weird thing to do.
I found the only other one in America, you know?
And just called him?
I called him because we're Facebook friends.
So you were Facebook friends first.
Yeah, and then the first thing I go is, what's your number? He gave it to me, I called him in 30 seconds. Okay? So then you know it's German? He goes, oh, I know Hollerbach is German. Did you ever visit Hollerbach? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, the German town, Hollerbach? And I go, what? You know?
Oh,
I was a German exchange student. I speak German, you know?
Oh.
And I went to, I stayed at, a guy came to live with us called Joachim Lockenbach. Yes. I went to go stay with Joachim Lockenbach in Krefeld, Germany. And then we went to Berlin and all this stuff. But I visited Köln and Trier and Frankfurt. But I didn't, Hollerbach is like some little dog and pony town. But it is my goal in life to retire, move to Hollerbach and become mayor. Because
Be awesome.
Come on.
I think you and the other Eric Hollerbach should both go there and decide to run the town together. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
We should. What if we got married?
That'd be so beautiful.
And we wouldn't have to change our name or anything like that.
I was going
to
ask though, are you related at all? Because that's going
to
prevent.
I don't know. I don't know. We tried to figure that out.
Okay.
He has relatives in Germany that he visited, and I'm sure I have the same ones, but it's a common name. It's actually kind of a common name in Germany, you know.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Then that's probably enough distance where you can enter a relationship with each other.
Yeah.
For the jokes. Yeah. That'd be hilarious.
I'm not gay. I've never done a gay act in my life, but if I married him for funny times, you know, in my dotage when I'm senile and impotent, you know, why not?
That'd be the great. I would respect that so much if you guys just got married.
Imagine the local.
Eric Hollerbachs.
Two 70-year-old Eric Hollerbachs walk into a bar.
Find love.
That's another episode of Highway Diary in the Bag.
Yeah.
Episode 291 with Dr. Katie Hausman.
Woo!
Bye, everybody.
Bye.